This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. I want to put this out there to the Tesla people. Just an interesting observation I've recently experienced over days of driving. I just got back late last night from almost a week away off of south of France and all that, and driving down there, you know, doing some content, driving all the way back in a off of Tesla Model 3. Don't say M3. I can't stand the way some people write down Tesla M3. That's just not right.
No, I know, because that's taken. There's already one of those.
It was there before.
It does rather sort of feed into my theory that a lot of Tesla people aren't car people at all. They are, if they're interested in anything, it's tech. But cars, bit of a closed book to them.
Yes. But anyway, I've got great things. I've got great feedback for the mass road trip we did in the Tez. But I want to talk about the floor pan bop.
What?
Yeah, the floor pan bop. When you're driving along, and I think it's sometimes, it happens more when you're pre-heating or pre-conditioning the battery ready to rapid charge at your next pit stop, which for people, if you don't understand EVs, are sort of, you know, a cold battery can't accept fast charge. So the car warms its battery up to be optimized so that it can inhale a higher amount of kilowatts when you pit stop. It's just all about efficiency.
And so a lot of EVs, I mean, the Teslas, you set your destination as a charger in the nav, and that immediately tells the car to start warming its own battery, and it flashes up a thing on the dash to tell you it's doing that. And I guess this is now sort of pretty common tech, isn't it?
It is.
But
it's
very, very integrated in a Tesla, because, of course, they own the chargers as well, so it's all in the nav. You don't have to faff about with the sat-mappy sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's exactly the least painless way of doing it with the Tezzes. Causes a supercharger.
Least painless.
Yeah, least painful even. Is that a double negative, which means it's very painful?
The least painless, that sounds terribly euphemistic.
Sorry.
Something a doctor would say. Now, or a dentist. We're going to do this the least painless way, I'm afraid. What?
Least painless. Hi, I'm least painless. I've thrown myself off it. Yeah, the floor pan bop.
Floor pan bop. I don't know about this.
So I was in the back for most of this journey. I don't know. It's got to be a good 13 hours each way.
Ooh.
And possibly more. We didn't do it in one stint. We stayed at one point in an extremely dismal hotel, but I'll come on to that. The floor pan bop in the back there, you can't put your feet under the front seats as a rear passenger. The gap's too small. Or unless you pump the seat up really high, but nobody wanted to do that because we were all tall. I say we're all tall. We're all still alive, so we're all tall. And so I kept hearing this noise, like boing, you know, like a baking tray in the oven.
Oh, that's sort of like a metal expanding or contracting.
Yes, but a flat piece of metal that's properly boinging. And the floor pan of the Tez was doing that, and it did it regularly during the course of the days that we were in it. And
so you're saying that the floor pan of a Tesla Model 3 is like an enormous baking tray?
Enormous baking tray. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
So this was when the battery was, as the car's driving along, the battery is heating itself because it knows it's about to go on a fast charger. So
it could be. It's to do with expansion and contraction, isn't it? It must be, mustn't it? But
That's interesting.
And apparently it's a Tez thing.
I'm doing a long journey in mine tomorrow, the longest journey I've done so far. and I'll report back if I hear any baking tray noises.
Please do, because I'm extremely intrigued.
Somebody from another car company did tell me that, have I mentioned this on the podcast before, that the Model 3 in terms of body engineering was a little bit amateurish in many places, and the Model Y is a lot better
in terms of, you know,
they've got their eye in a bit more.
I had heard, I mean, it makes sense that it evolved. And actually, that makes perfect sense for what my conclusion has been for the long journey that I've just spent in the Model 3, which wasn't mine and it wasn't Tesla's. It was lovely. In fact, he's a patron and listener to this podcast, Darren from the 2CV shop.
Darren as in de cheveux full of smut, Darren.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. He knows. And I don't want to let the cat completely out of the bag, but it was revealed to me over the last few days that not all the smut made the bin. Anyway, it's highly collectible now. So I've realised that the model... I warmed to the Model 3. I was thinking, you know, that it is hard to fault the charging integration and the fact that you can just drive it. And this thing didn't even have a heat pump, and we were doing like regularly 80 miles an hour. For hours. It was returning really good efficiency, considering it's bloody cold. And so I'm left thinking, and I'm going to put this out to the listeners because I haven't really had chance to do it yet, and this is maybe mild entertainment for saddos. get your ruler out. Find the wheelbase of a Model 3. What's the closest interesting retro or classic car with the same wheelbase, because I'm going to cut the body off a damaged Model 3 and I'm going to bastard graft on something interesting, and that's going to be my
that's
next
a
family
good
car.
Challenge
I'm going to do
right,
it
right hey should we let's make this a little bit easier for people.
No,
I'm going to look up the wheelbase of the Model 3 just so we know. All right, so
did
well,
you just
Google
say
says,
did you do that in the Gordon Murray official Gordon Murray
official Gordon Murray wheelbase. Now, Google says that the wheelbase of a 2024 Tesla Model 3 is 2,875 millimetres. So, get cracking.
It doesn't have to be millimetre perfect. We know this.
No, there's a bit of wiggle, isn't there? Because were there people years ago who realised that the wheelbase of a C4 Corvette was within a few mil of that of an Allegro, and so they grafted the Allegro pan onto the
oh
VET
yeah they did
chassis
they did. I mean, the track was different. But,
yes, the track is a consideration. But that's why spacers exist. The problem is, I suppose, older cars generally would probably be...
narrower.
I mean, they're smaller,
track.
Aren't they, older cars? But then the Model 3 is not a massively wide car. So it's a bit of... I bet something like a Granada.
Oh, my gosh. I want a family estate. I was thinking Volvo 240, for example. Or Volvo 740 body shell.
Well, now we're doing people's work for them here, but the Volvo 740 wheelbase.
Stop doing the numbers. That's the challenge. You're answering your own pub quiz, you goon.
Well,
stop it.
All right, I won't give the exact numbers, but suffice to say that you're going to have to let out the arches on your 740 shell a little bit to accommodate the wheelbase of the Model 3, which is, as it turns out, longer.
Of course, because older cars have more overhang. Didn't they?
Quite a bit, actually. Okay, well, anyway, this is an interesting challenge. So, hello@smithandsniff.com. If you have got an interesting classic or older car that you think would fit without too much angle grinding of arches and things onto the underpan.
I've realised that's what I want.
Model 3.
I mean, you could, if you really wanted to, you could look for a Model S, preferably an older one, which still has, I don't know, free supercharging forever and ever and ever, as long as Elon doesn't find out that it's been binned. And then,
that's a very big car, though, isn't it, relatively?
Yeah.
Wide car.
It's bloody wide, yeah. You'd want some JDM arches.
That's sort of built to American proportions. Interesting challenge, though. I mean, I suppose the thing is, then, you'd have to... it'd be easier to just lift the dashboard over from the Tesla because it would be...
Yeah, you'd leave.
Otherwise, you can't really control the car very easily.
Yeah, I'd probably leave the dash in and probably try and disguise it slightly. So you could still have the central main control system, the tablet, but you could recover or manipulate the kind of plinth, the simple plinth. Yeah. Anyway, I just think, and put an older steering wheel on it maybe. I don't know, I'm at that point where I think there's a lot to like with that car, and I would love an electric family car that's does that stuff, but I don't want that. And I'm just being a fussy kid.
I suppose the other thing is, as we've said before, one of the things about those Model 3s is that you can see the driver's crotch because the scuttle is so low.
Yes.
And
It's not a shirt cocking car, is it?
That. No. So it's very much not. Not a car for Donald Duck or Winnie the Pooh. And that would cure that if you had a Volvo 740, horribly weird looking because the back wheels would sit sort of towards the end of the overhang. But but nonetheless, an interesting proposition.
Also, if the if you found a very wide car, which is unlikely with a classic compared to a Tez, I don't mind inboard wheels, as in, you know, sort of Jaguar E-Type tunneled in. They look like R. Kelly's eyes, basically, quite far into the sockets.
But then this is one of the things that I don't like about the Jaguar E-Type, which is, you know, obviously is a fabulous looking car, but I always think when people like Eagle
push
resto mod them, they push the wheels out a bit and it just improves the stance enormously.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a common thing. And of course, it probably makes it handle better because wider track normally does, doesn't it? With modern rubber and all that. So that's it. I want to do a floor pan swap. It's really easy. I just do it in my lunch hour.
Oh, interesting. I'm not going to say what I've just discovered.
Okay.
Because hopefully a listener will alight on this, but there's certainly a very interesting, an interesting car from the last 30 years that seems to have an almost...
Oh, really? I was going to say...
Almost identical wheelbase.
It doesn't have to be a classic. It could be a 20-year-old car, which is not quite thought of as a classic yet. I'm not, I'm not militant about it. I want it to just have a good... I'll even do an MPV. You know, I'd even go Ronnie Pickering spec with the Picasso. Oh, Citroën Zara Picasso.
I might know someone who needs to get rid of a Picasso if you're interested.
Is it Pickering spec?
It is not in that sort of bruised purple. It's in that sort of mimsy, light, greeny blue. Greeny, really, isn't it? A very light green that was a kind of signature Picasso colour.
Yeah, I do love them, you know.
Do you?
They have an A pillar like no other. I absolutely love them. Yeah.
Yes, they do.
I think they're the same rake at the front as they are at the back. So from the side, you don't know which is the front or the back if you were to ignore the lights. It almost looks the same.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
I like them.
I do know somebody like who is probably looking to sell a Picasso. And when I asked if it was running and everything, they said, well, a lot of lights do come on the dashboard, but it's okay. It's been like that for ages.
Oh, standard. Oh, my gosh, I've just realised about the floor pan swap thing. I know that blimmin' old money one-owner spec Fiat Multipla with the baboon's anus leather interior.
Yes.
Yeah, that could be amazing. Imagine a Tesla Model 3 dual motor Multipla.
Sure, just go on. Since we've mentioned it, I'm going to look at. Oh,
this is no challenge anymore. You're such a
it's
no dice.
No.
Okay.
The Multipla wheelbase is quite a bit shorter.
Cack.
I mean, I'm going to suggest, in fact, that the wheels, because the Multipla is not an overhangy car, particularly at the rear.
No.
So I think you're going to run out of options there. Your rear wheels will, in fact, be behind the car.
Right, okay.
Unless you... Because I don't suppose you can shorten the wheelbase on the Tesla because of the battery pack.
You might be able to. Yeah, you might be able to.
Because doesn't it sort of pretty much occupy the space between the axles?
Listen, can we let the listeners do this? That was the point.
Yeah,
we plant the seed, cover up the soil, and we walk away. That's
exactly
what we're doing
good
here. All right.
Very good philosophy. Now I want to hear more about a Dismal Hotel then.
Okay, so before Dismal Hotel, I want to talk about Poo Bouncer. and Poe Bouncer was, have you ever...
Out of Neighbours.
Have you needed... Have you ever needed a toilet chaperone? Because I have yesterday.
What?
So here's what... Guys, listen. Here's the scene. Picture this. Look. We stopped off in the same kind of services-ish. It wasn't services. It was where a load of Tesla superchargers were in a shopping mall in France. And I actually wrote down the name of it so that in case people went, oh, I've never heard of that place. Where is it? Well, it was, he says, scrolling, Troyes, T-R-O-Y-E-S. It's a shopping area with a bunch of Tesla superchargers. Now, we are convinced it's a money laundering mall, and I'll tell you why. Okay? I've had a while to think about this. By the way, it's a very pretty shopping mall, kind of outlet, village, whatever. But we pull up, put the Tez in, let the floor pan do the bop, and we think, right, first things first, could do with the toilet, could do with maybe getting ourselves some caffeine, stretch your legs, etc., etc. So,
et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's a very nice looking mall. Where are the toilets? There aren't any. No shops have any toilets. There's no toilet facilities anywhere. Oh, no, hang on, I'm lying. McDonald's have a toilet, but McDonald's is slightly out of the shopping mall area where there are no footpaths to get to. So you have to walk across mud, roads with no paths, then some more mud, then fall down a bank, and then you go to McDonald's. And we did this twice because A, we needed the toilet, and B, I wanted a coffee. There are no coffee facilities in this shopping mall. It's weird. Really, really. And everyone we asked just went, oh, no, we don't have anything like that. You're like, what? So there was nobody in any of the shops, even though they were immaculate and they had actual products in them to sell. And it all looked quite good condition. So we're convinced this is just a money laundering faux shopping mall that nobody needs to buy anything from. So...
Like those ones in North Korea that they show visiting journalists around to make it look like people can actually go to shops and buy things.
Oh, gosh, I've not heard of those.
Well, maybe, I don't think these are commonplace, but there's a department store in Pyongyang that looks like, you know, everything's fine. I think there's a lot of stuff in North Korea that is there just to show visiting journalists everything's fine, when of course it's not.
That's amazing, isn't it? The alarm bells should definitely be ringing there. So,
yeah.
so we did that, and that was fine, but we couldn't stop thinking about it. Then on the way back yesterday, we stopped at a different supercharger at a slightly different place. Oh no, we didn't actually. It was snowing so heavily, I didn't want to make the treacherous walk across mud and slopes and a road where no cars will stop for pedestrians. And I thought, this is not worth it's not worth dying for. I'm not doing this. So we went into, it was like a B&Q, massive. We were in there for about half an hour looking for a lav, and there was one. So I was like, right, going in, have to. We all needed to. Went in there. And there were two slightly vapey lads in tracksuit bottoms who were sort of like flying, kicking one another and shouting at one another, which I was like, oh, it's not great when you need a poo. But anyway, honestly, it's this random. And I thought, straight to the cubicles, Johnny, don't mess around. Come on, here we go. There's four cubicles in a line. Go in the first one, shut the door, realise you can't lock it because someone's basically flying, kicked the lock off. Okay, no good. Go into the next one, turn around, shit, lock's been flying, kicked off this one as well. Of course, there was one that was occupied, but all three that weren't were clean and everything, but they had no lock. I said to Darren, my colleague who I was with, I said, listen, look, you know, the wolves are at the door. I've got to do this before we hit the road for another 8-hour drive. And so he said, oh, don't worry, I'll be your bouncer. So he was my poo bouncer. He stood by the door while I did what I needed to do and just made sure that nobody broke in. It's a little bit of stress attached to that because you feel like you need to, you know, go quick and not hang around.
I was going to say, my kids sometimes do that.
Yes.
Stay outside, Daddy. Stay outside.
Yeah.
Because they sort of, you don't want to be left in a strange cubicle. But
so you're a plot minder. Yeah. You're basically a plot minder.
Yes. Aren't you? I was going to say that.
So, sorry, this is not very car-y, but it will become car-y, I hope.
No, I feel like we're shedding listeners between the Tesla chat again and now your turd bouncing. Then,
well,
so I'm going to encourage you to move on to the dismal hotel because I love stories.
Okay, so that was the
dismal hotel.
That was the toiletless, coffeeless, pathless shopping centre.
That is bizarre, though.
Interwoven with the entire trip we were away in France, and I really enjoyed it. We met some amazing people. But you go in a restaurant and you tell them you're vegetarian. I have never ever been looked at by women like it. Never. Goodness gracious me. One woman looked at me like I'd exposed myself to her. So the look of disgust. Oh, absolute disgust. She even did this with her hands. You know, like, I've washed my hands with you. Like that.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, it was incredible. Oh, and she was the maitre d' of the damn hotel. Right. Not the dismal one. Right, so dismal. Night before last, we finished a long shooting day and we knew we needed to make good progress back towards Calais. We were never going to get to Calais because that's 9 hours and we were leaving at about 6 p.m. So he said, let's get north of Lyon, which is notoriously quite congested, etc., etc. So we put some good hours in and then we saw a supercharger or a Tesla destination charger, actually, close to an Ibis budget. We pre-booked it. Fine, it's cheap, does the job. We're only going to be in there for 5 hours or so. Well, we got to the Ibis budget, plugged the motor in, let the floor pan do its ting. And it was a twin room. I was sharing with videographer Phil because it was like, you know, we're good friends and Phil doesn't snore and I don't know, doesn't have toilet issues. And we realised that the twin room is not quite as described, and also the non-smoking rooms are definitely not non-smoking. The smell in the corridor was like some sort of like 70s working men's club. And then we opened the door, which had a massive no smoking sign on it. And it was like, oh my gosh, has someone just genied 20 Lambert and Butler in here? It was horrendous. And then we looked at the fact there was one king size bed and over the top of it, like over the top where the head goes, was a bunk bed that was about 2 feet wide and 4 foot long. And it also happened to be, I think, unnecessarily high and close to the ceiling. So,
how close? Like, as in, if you sat up with a start, would you smash your head
yes,
on the ceiling?
Yes, 100%. So there I
brilliant.
Am.
Brilliant but, design.
So I'm like, I said, look, I'll take the bunk bed. It's fine. I was a bit like, for fuck's sake, just...
But you're taller than Phil.
I know, but Phil's been working hard for the Late Break show and I just wanted to treat him right. But of course, what we were both chuckling but also annoyed about the smell of cigs. But what I hadn't factored in is the higher you go, the more ciggy it smells, obviously, in the air.
Oh.
And by the time I got up to the heady heights of the bunk bed, not only did I realise that it stank more, but I also realised there was no bedding on the bed. And we looked all around the room and the only thing I could find was a sheet to cover the mattress and a blanket which looked like it was straight out of a village hall or a care home. And I thought, right, bollocks, I'm just going to go with that and I'll leave my T-shirt and socks and stuff on because the heating didn't work in the room. Thanks, Ibis. And I wrapped myself around this blanket and it absolutely stank of cigarette smoke. It was like I was borrowing the worst blanket in the world and I needed to go to sleep. Awful. Awful, awful, awful thing. But there was a redeeming thing in the morning when my alarm went off and I very nearly smashed my head on the ceiling. And luckily...
And then fell 10 feet to the ground because you forgot you were in a bunk bed.
Yeah, and thankfully, because we'd had such a short sleep, I didn't need a midnight wares because I thought, if I need a midnight wares, I'm going to break my hip. So yeah. I didn't drink any water intentionally. So I woke up smelling like...
Just tiffed it.
Yes, I did.
No liquids, handful of sand before bedtime.
Yeah.
You're good.
I woke up smelling of a 90s nightclub, and I thought, I bloody hope the shower's good. And sure enough, the shower was amazing. It was one of those ABS plastic moulded pods that sort of sits in the corner.
They
of
love those in France, don't they? I had never seen one of those until I went to France.
I love them.
In the 90s.
I'd like one in the back of my Honda Element. Ideally, I think it'd be great.
Sort of, you'd have to cut it up quite a lot. But get the people who are going to cut down your Model 3 to fit under a Fiat Multipla.
Exactly. And also it'd be a sit-down shower, wouldn't it? It wouldn't be a stand-up.
I feel like I can tolerate a lot in a budget hotel particularly, but if it's got a shit shower, I'm in a shit mood after that. I can't...
Agree. I took the Siggy blanket because now I know that the shower was okay. So that's that. So yeah, we got a nice clear 4.5 hours sleep out of that. And yes.
That's not enough sleep.
It's not enough sleep. We took the ferry, we took the Brian out there because we were less on the clock. And on the way back, we took the Channel Tunnel. And I just want to bring this back to slightly car-y news here, folks. You know when you're, I think, what is it, 30 minutes, something like that, you're sitting on the train under the sea. And you're chatting around your cars. I quite like it. There's something quite unusual about it, and it's fun, especially when you're with other people. But I suddenly thought to myself, this is 30-something minutes of completely dead time. As a car person, and when you're on a road trip, cars can get quite soiled inside. Why don't they have a coin-operated vacuum cleaner so you can have a Eurotunnel vacuum session?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's a good idea.
Yes, isn't it? I thought it was not a shit idea either. And I thought, I want a coin-op Henry or a Cartier so that I get on the train and I think, okay, I'll spend 25 minutes really vacuuming and worshipping the interior. So when we get out of France, there's no litter, there's no nuts and biscuits and toss. And I've got all the dust off the dashboard, which I forgot was there. And actually, you could do a nice little cabin cleanse. And it'll make you feel better about the car, because it certainly makes me feel better about the car when I'm driving around in an internally clean motor.
I could force my wife to take a trip to France for the day in her e-up, and then she could vacuum the fucking thing out because it's disgusting in there.
Oh, is it gross?
It's just really crummy, which is mostly the children's fault.
Yeah.
But not entirely. I got into that car the other day, and there was a really shriveled apple core in the door bit.
Oh, seriously? Fruit in the door.
And I don't know about you, but I was apple cores, they go out the window because that's not littering.
No,
they're organic, they'll break down, and I always imagine in my head a little mouse will have a snack.
It's funny, I imagine a whole gang of ants bench pressing it.
And they go, I don't want to imagine a gang of ants so much, but a little field mouse going, ooh, that's a tasty treat.
I like a gang of ants. And they go, oi, oi, boys, that guy's just thrown it out. We need another 85 of you, and we could drag this bastard back to the nest.
Yeah, but anyway, Yes, my wife's car is. It's weird because my wife likes a tidy house, but she doesn't extend this to her car, which is often quite messy. And I'm the other way around. I don't mind a messy house so much, but I want a tidy car.
Do you know what?
Because a car moves about and I don't want things rolling and rattling and
well, that's,
all the rest
you
of
and
it.
I share this. You and I share this.
Yes. Well, you told me that you didn't used to let your kids eat in the car when they were little. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Richard. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I've still got it. I can actually see it if I look behind me. The original, I've said this in a previous cast, I think. I've still got the original travel blanket that my dad bought to put on the back seat when me and my brother Greg were kids, so we didn't bugger up his Avenger and then Montego. He gave it to me years ago, and he went, oh, I don't need it anymore, you have it. And then when I became a dad, I continued the stupid tradition, and I got this travel tartan blanket, black one, and I tucked it round all the nether regions of the squab on the back seat. So you know when you have the ISOFIX for the kids' seats, it sometimes creates two big dents in the leather. The 300C Chrysler we had the touring, and I thought I don't want that. So the tartan blanket helped that, and then when the kids like dropped custard creams down there, I could just sweep it out. And then I was like, do you know what? I don't want you to eat in the car. So I banned it. Other people in my family didn't ban it. So when I wasn't there, obviously things happened. And then I could tell what had happened because crisps were evident.
CSI Quavers.
It's exactly
those
that.
Bloody oat bars. You know those oat bars? I think they're called Organics is the brand name. My kids still love those. I think they're really meant for toddlers, but they're a good sort of like, just get this down, you kind of snack that's not a, you know, sugary thing.
It's not,
But they're quite crumbly. And they, I would say they're the chief culprit in the absolute state of my wife's Volkswagen.
Yeah, I know exactly the ones you mean.
There's someone we know, I won't say his name, but he got a Jag I-Pace. It was around the time we had ours. And I think he had the light-coloured leather interior.
Oh.
And he's got children about the same age as ours. And I went, ooh, that's bold. I saw the car parked and I could see the front seats. And I went, that's bold. Your kid's going to, you know, run ragged on that. And he went, oh, I've thought of that. And he opened the back door. And he'd got all of this sort of like specialised, you know, kind of like, not tarpaulin, but that kind of...
tarpaulin.
Like, you know, sort of nylon material.
Yes.
Back seat covered in it. But then this kind of hammock thing that sort of protected the backs of the front seats as well. It was an extraordinary setup. I admired his devotion to keeping the car nice.
I had that. I had the backs of the front seats covered because the kids, when they had very short legs, they would just sort of smear their boots and shoes up and down where the map pocket is for the maps that nobody uses anymore because there's no maps. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Well, there we go. So if you listen...
But this looked like a sort of like a racing yacht sail had collapsed into the back of his car. It was really... But then again, I think he kept his I-Pace tidy, at least until his wife repeatedly drove it into baths and damaged the outside.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, that's a separate thing. Just moving on and bringing this to cars.
Although the Eurostar was before? The Eurotunnel was relevant.
Oh yes, you did. Yes, okay, fair enough. That's
so. Can we have some Eurotunnel vacuuming, please, Eurotunnel people? Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a good.
I'll trial it. I'll champion it.
Oh, speaking. I've been promising to mention this for ages. You do a lot of. You spend a lot of time on the road.
I do,
and I know that you like a coffee.
Yes, I do.
So, I presume that you go into a Starbucks now and then.
Yes, I do. In fact, I went into one at the Eurotunnel when we'd got through to other side.
My wife has been asking me to mention this on the podcast. Now, normally she doesn't ever say, oh, you should talk about this on the podcast because, you know...
She doesn't listen to it, does she,
Richard?
She's
got better things to do. She does.
What?
But she doesn't tell me when she's doing it. And so sometimes she'll just come home and go, oh, I heard you talking about this. So she'd probably listen to this one and go, I do vacuum out my fucking car, you cheeky twat. But she's asked me to bring this up, and she's mentioned it a few times now because it's really annoying her. She doesn't go to Starbucks that often, but she believes that the Starbucks Corporation of America has a low-level conspiracy going on to not sell you a filter coffee.
Yes.
Have you noticed this?
Yes, because I know you're a fan of the simple filter coffee, which is a good thing.
Just want a simple filter coffee.
Yeah.
I... I just need a black coffee.
Yeah, you don't have any additives, do you?
Yeah, and I think amongst the coffee chains, the Starbucks filter coffee is perfectly acceptable coffee.
Yes.
As coffee snobs get on my tits. I'm usually in a circumstance where I just need some caffeine and something hot.
You're a base model coffee guy, aren't you? I've just realised.
I like a base model, you know, I mean...
Which is good.
A step above, a sort of tepid Nescafe instant.
Oh, no.
Stained quick fit mug. But coffee that's been made with proper beans and properly hot water and everything, that a filter coffee is fine. And they have them. They have that. They call it drip, I think, don't they?
It doesn't sound attractive, really, does it?
Costa and Cafe Nero, I don't think, do this. They make you have an Americano.
Yeah.
But Starbucks, and it's quick as well, that's the other thing. It's like pit stop mentality. You go in, filter coffee, please. They don't have to ask your name or make you wait down the end bit. They just give it to you and you bugger off. And that's one of the things I like about the filter coffee. But if you go into a Starbucks now, and my wife has done this more than me and is convinced it's a conspiracy, the machine is still there and to all intents and purposes is ready to give you a filter coffee, but they've never set it going. So when you ask for a filter coffee, they go, sorry, it'll be about an hour. Would you like an Americano? And the Americano costs a little bit more.
Right.
And she thinks they're scamming everyone who just wants a filter coffee to upgrade to the GL that is the Americano.
It's a bit like going into a Dacia dealer. For a long time, I believe, they didn't really stock the base model Sandero because they wanted you to get the one that was 400 quid more that had, alloys and non-white paint. But if you went in there and stamped your foot and you went, no, I want to buy the one that's actually 7995. It's just 7995 and that's what I want. They'd go, oh, bloody hell. Okay. Well, that's going to take us 2.5 weeks to get one. Is that okay? Yes.
I'm going to have to ring the factory. I don't actually speak Romanian, so I may accidentally just order you a pizza by mistake. I'm really sorry. You probably should just pay. I don't know. I wonder if you really stamped your feet, they'd go, look, we'll do you the mid-model for 7995.
That's what I think.
Just to get you out of our premises. Because that's what some people in Starbucks will do. If you go, I want a filter coffee, they go, we haven't got filter. It'll take like 20 minutes to get it all going again. Or we'll do you an Americano for the same price. But they don't always do that. Sometimes they just insist you pay more.
I have to say I'm with you, Rich, because I like a filter coffee. And I'm going to start doing that more and more. I mean, I would...
Try it.
Yeah, I mean, I like a black coffee. I'd probably still keep my dab of cinnamon in there, if that's all right. cheeky little dab, you know. So that's not car related.
It's on the road related. Come on. This is why I brought it up, and also I can now say to my wife, look, I've brought up your thing. By the way, just ignore the bit where I was slagging you off for your car being filthy inside. Something else I just wanted to bring up that is car related, and it was something we were talking about last week or the week before about. It was a listener's message about unusual police cars. Do you remember they'd seen an old Discovery?
Yes.
It still had the blue lights on it. Well, we've had a message from a couple of people who know their stuff on account of being in or formerly of the police. I won't say this listener's name, but they said that the discussion about the age of police cars struck a chord because they've been in a situation. Now, this person identifies themselves as a response cop. Which is quite a cool sounding thing.
That sounds great.
Response caps. But yes, there'd been a situation where we were really short of cars, and he got a colleague to drive him round to out-of-the-way police stations on their patch to see if they could find anything left lying around in the yard.
What?
Yeah, so he went to a police station in a sort of semi-rural town and found an old Ford Focus that was tatty, but ran, and it just got him through the night shift.
So hang on.
Except he said that...
Just like a first gen.
The blue lights. He said it's a 2011 Ford Focus.
Okay, yeah.
He said it looked tatty, but it worked on the night shift. However, the blue lights had developed a strange fault so that when you started it up, in the few seconds it took for the rattly diesel engine to catch, all the blue lights would flash and then immediately stop once the engine started.
Oh, that's great when you're trying to do a covert cold start, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah,
shit.
Just sneak up on them. Oh, shit. He also says that in my neck of the woods, in Avon and Somerset, Force. They have an R-Reg Land Rover Defender, what? Which they use for Glastonbury.
What, it's just a Glastonbury cop car? That's it?
Well, sounds like it, yeah. Well, he does it in regular service, but it's, I suppose they probably keep it around and keep it running, because then when Glastonbury happens, they can go...
So that's Field.
Get the old 90s Defender out. That's, I'm going to have to keep my eyes
you
peeled
need to,
now.
You need to try and buy that when it goes out of service, Rich.
Oh, my God.
Don't you think...
I wonder how many miles it's got on it.
Probably not that many, and it's only done field pursuits. You just think it's only ever chased.
Yeah.
It's only ever chased.
I don't know, but I bet they probably haven't had the chassis wax oiled or whatever, have they?
No. So it's
probably,
oh, it'll be crusty.
Rotten as anything into there. I don't know. Anyway, thank you, unnamed response cop, for that on-the-ground intel. But there was also another listener, again, I won't name them, but he used to be on the executive driving team for a chief constable's office.
What?
So... all senior officers, which is assistant chief constable and above, plus senior officers that are department heads, have private cars, in inverted commas, that are fitted with the emergency equipment of lights and sirens.
Even now?
So, even now, it sounds like. Well, this guy is no longer, it sounds like, in that job, but he says, at the time, my chief had a large family and a Renault Espace, which was most unusual, tanking it to a serious incident on Blues and Twos. The choice of car is up to the individual officer, but it's then fitted out prior to delivery. The registration number can be personalised as the car belongs, in inverted commas, to the officer, but the number is blocked on the police national computer, so if it's checked, it comes back to the relevant force. So I suppose that might explain the Disco 4, then? That's a senior officer's car. It's still got the Blues and Twos, but it doesn't have... but it's also sort of a private car. So there we go. Thank you again.
That's a great bit of trivia.
Well, I said our listeners know stuff, and they do.
Well, I've actually got a police-relevant segue. In yesterday's very long drive home, in the floor pan bot Tesla, videographer Phil started chatting about misheard lyrics on songs, which you and I both are fond of.
Yes.
And this one properly did me in. He said, I used to work in Top Man for years. And of course, in between, in quiet moments in the stores with Top Shop and Top Man, we'd be rearranging all the clothes and getting new stock out and stuff. He said, one day, one of the guys I was working with came out of the stockroom with an armful of shoeboxes, and he was singing at the top of his voice. And he said this song had not long come out by U2. He went, "Hello, hello, I'm in a police convertible." and Phil went, he said, what did you just say? And he said, "That's a U2 song in a police convertible. So awesome." And he went, that's not the song. That's not what Bono's saying.
Oh, my God.
I had to listen to it in the car yesterday, and I thought, it does really sound like that. But then I started getting a bit nerdy, going, I'm pretty sure that police don't ever order convertibles.
I'm pretty sure. Unless... it's the Dutch police.
Oh, what?
With their 9/11 Targas.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Because somehow in the 60s, I think, the Dutch police went to their superiors and went, now, we need convertible cars because we might need to stand on the seats and you know, shout through a loud hailer at a crowd or something. And the police went, that makes sense. And they went, oh, also, sometimes we have to reverse really fast down the hard shoulder of a motorway, and a water-cooled car will overheat doing that, so we need an air-cooled convertible. And this is what we've decided. It's the 9/11 Targa. And somehow the Dutch government or whatever went,
yeah,
okay, yeah, good idea.
I think I've seen pictures of those.
Spunked on a load of 9/11s. It's the best police scam I've ever heard. Just going, we sometimes need to drive under barriers, so we need a low car. And also, if we need to ram somewhere, we can't damage the engine, so we need to be mid-engine. So we've ordered a load of Audi R8s. I hope that's okay. I still can't believe it. And they've had 9/11 Targas for years. I think they finally stopped. But they, I think they even went into the water-cooled era, which sort of rather undid one of their lies about reversing fast and they needed a water-cooled, an air-cooled car. But
yeah, it would also, I would love to own an XNL Cop, Pursuit Cop, a Targa, but I'd feel like the seats would be trodden on. I feel like the seats...
Yes, with boots.
Yeah,
on.
But unless they've got some specialist covers like the ones we were talking about to stop children from soiling cars.
Maybe I, so, because you'd want to... I have a feeling, has Jerry Seinfeld got an ex-Dutch cop car or something? I feel like that they're quite sought after, or have replicas.
I would love
made.
One. I think Porsche have one in the museum. I've definitely seen images, because the... Didn't they have a 356 once, which had a bell on the front? This was back when they had bells. I think I've seen a 356 with a bell on the front, which sounds wrong. I'm not being naughty. If anyone has ever travelled in one or knows anybody that owns one, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear the pointless trivia around that.
It seems like... I see now. I'm actually talking a little bit of shit because I think pre the 911 Targas, in fact, the original scam with the Dutch police was 356 Cabrios for the same reason.
Yes, okay.
Oh, yeah, we need to stand on the sheets and also reverse.
Stand on the sheets.
And they had this fantastic sort of like... blue light on a pole.
That's right.
Crudely attached to the windscreen mirror. Jerry Seinfeld used one of these for comedians in cars getting...
Oh, so he has a Dutch 356 Cabrio.
I don't know if it's his or if he just borrowed it. I'd have to look at that episode again. But
I would really like that. I'd love a Dutch spec cop car. I think that would be great.
Because also, the 911s... are from an era when I think Dutch police livery was quite cool. They had like orange, sort of orange panels.
Was it green? Was it green
on
writing?
The doors and things.
I think it was.
I just hang on. Let's have a look. Dutch 911 Target.
While you're looking that up, I was doing a piece to camera on a late break show video on a lovely harbour side in the south of France.
Yes,
and we. You know, when as soon as you roll the cameras, just suddenly all the noise and all the people appear, it seems.
Always.
This lady with an extremely badly trained Staffordshire Terrier was around that kept running after a tennis ball that she kept definitely throwing it towards us. And what that wasn't so annoying. It's that when it walked past, I realised it was wearing a full nappy. I've never seen a dog wearing a full nappy before. I didn't realise this was a thing.
Yes.
It was a dog with a damn nappy.
I don't know why you'd do that. I mean, you know, I suppose people who don't want to bend down and pick up poo with a bag, but...
No, but then you've got to deal with the extra kind of...
Well, I know then you've got to empty the nappy and then...
There's bound to be some squidge when it'll sit down like babies do. They go for a poo and then they go and sit somewhere and it just makes it all worse. So,
yes.
You know what I'm trying to say.
I think I found there's an original Dutch police car here for sale. It's a 1992 911 Targa, so a 964.
Oh, my gosh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, genuine. But, I mean, I know 964 prices generally have gone a bit down.
Yes.
But this is particularly punchy, and I guess it's because it's a genuine Dutch police car. It's up for, near as damn it, €140,000.
Shit, so how much would that compare? What sort of a NL police premium are you paying for that? It's quite a lot, aren't you?
That's quite a lot. I don't know. I was looking at 911s the other day because I was... Have you seen that company? They're Hungarian, called CAM, that do sort of resto mods on 912s.
Yes, I have. They're really lightweight.
Beautiful.
They're doing
work.
A full carbon bodied thing, aren't
exactly.
they? Is that right?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, that...
But even their sort of non... You know, their original car is beautifully done. And doing the 912, you know, it's kind of just something a little bit different, I suppose. But they are, it's something like $300,000.
Shit. It's funny how the 912 has suddenly, like, people have started to really champion it. I don't know whether it's...
Well...
There's less flat four racism like there used to be in the Porsche world.
Yeah, because this is the thing. Having looked at the CAM... cars and how nice they are, I was like, I wonder what just a normal 912 is these days. And they've gone absolutely batshit price-wise.
They have. It's really annoying.
because they used to be really not sought after very much. And I remember seeing a really, really delightful one only about 2 or 3 years ago. Like, full restoration. It was exquisite on steel wheels, orange, really nice period colour. And I think it was 50 grand or something. So it was top end at that point. Maybe less. Maybe it was 40 something. But it was just perfect if you wanted a really immaculate 912. And now I think that car would be twice that. They seem to have gone really silly.
They have. And weirdly, I did a car cave week before last or so. A guy with quite a large workshop full of tasty, eclectic cars. And he's the new owner of the Beast, the 27 litre Rolls Merlin engined thing.
That guy we met at Goodwood, he came over and said hi.
That's right. So he now owns the Beast, and he's repainted it and reupholstered it so it doesn't look like a sort of, in his words, I think, an NHS prosthetic limb. And it has the Rolls grill back on it. But the reason why I'm telling you this is because parked next to it in his collection is a really early 912, and he's had it restored, and he's owned a lot of cars, and he says it's such a joy to drive. He said, I just keep getting back in it. And I think it's that whole thing of, like, years ago when I was going to migrate from the Beetle to a 912, when you could still get a very nice one for $5,000. I'm obviously not bitter about not buying one for $5,000 then. The people that knew always said the difference is like you could with the late 356s, you can kind of drive them flat out everywhere and on a racetrack. So and you can tune them till they're not far off a 2 litre flat six early 911 in power. But obviously they're lighter.
They're very tunable, aren't they? You can do a lot.
Yeah, and I think I like the fact that, you know, the 356 obviously never had a six engine. So therefore, why was the 912 thought of as being the runt? Because actually, all it was doing is continuing the pure bloodline. So
yes,
yeah. Anyway, if anyone's got one for $5,000 for sale, that's not shit.
I'll take one for $5,000 as well. Actually,
make it two. Thank you.
I'm trying to look up 964s. There's one listed here as the only 964 Targa for sale in the UK, and it's POA, which would be illegal under my reign.
What, like, I'm not buying it on principle because you're not telling me how much it is.
Any dealer listing something as POA would immediately be flogged with wet rope. That's no use at all. There is actually, in fact, another 964 Targa here in the US, and that's up for 94 and a bit in pounds.
Wow.
So, yeah, it seems like there may be a little Dutch police premium. There's too many POA cars here up against the wall, a lot of you.
Can I just say what POA, in my head, POA just means piss off arsehole. I don't want to sell it.
Yeah.
Piss off arsehole.
I suppose the thing about it is the next stage, because it's naturally off-putting, isn't it? But the next stage is, if you just rang them and went, how much is that car, please? If they then start being difficult, then they are definitely getting a visit from some thugs in a van, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you know, I'd quite like it if everyone is put off by POA like we are. But if you do commit and you go, actually, I'm going to phone up about this, and the price is ridiculously cheap. So you phone up that POA Targa and they go, cool, you're the first person to inquire about it. Yeah, well, we're thinking of letting it go for maybe €12,000. How does that sound? You just go, does it drive? Is it on the road? Yeah, it's all on the road. It's had two owners. It's a lovely, clean car. Go,
why'd you put POA then? Or just like nice surprises? Yeah,
I'm just seeing if anyone... It's like those Banksys, which people thought were fakes, but they were real and they were buying them for $100. And then that was the party trick. Can somebody please out there do that and let me know in advance so I can buy a 964 for €10,000?
I'm letting this 964 go cheap because someone's vandalised the door. Isn't that a Banksy?
Yeah.
I wanted to read out a it's just nothing relates to nothing, but except something we were talking about last week. I was talking about wearing a roll neck and a flat cap to the Bicester Scramble.
Yes.
A listener calling himself Seb, although... Seb, your email address reveals that's not your name at all. He says, hello, Richard and Johnny. Just been listening to your discussion, what to wear, flat caps, etc., etc.
Etc.
Just know, I was only thinking the other day that middle-aged men at Cars and Coffee are all taking their style cues from the Build-A-Bear workshop. I do know what he means. He says, anyone with a young daughter that has dragged them into one of these stores will note how the bears are all dressed as Chris Harris and Neil Clifford from Collecting Cars.
Hang on. Hang on.
Those Build-A-Bear workshops do like a gilet and a flat cap.
That'd be amazing. So hang on, can we have Mr. Scramble Bears? I think that would be fantastic.
I think they just exist, don't they? That's the thing. It is true that we're all dressing like bloody Build-A-Bear.
Hang on, hang on.
You don't know what Build-A-Bear is. I mean, I'll put this in the Patreon show notes, but it is a phenomenon.
Hang on, are we going to see in the next few weeks a new sales platform called Collecting Bears?
Oh, God.
If you've got a Stief with one eye missing, but, you know, it's original, it's never been touched much, we'll be able to help you market that on a global platform. Come and talk to us. We're the ones in Chile.
Talk to us.
Well, that's brilliant. Yeah. I love that. The Build-A-Bear.
That's good, isn't it? some other housekeeping. I was going to mention the fact that, sorry, last week we were very, very covert about your new car.
I think there's a better way of putting it, Richard. I was an imbecile and forgot what I was putting on my own.
I wasn't going to say that.
I forgot what I was going.
Since you're owning your own imbecility.
Yes.
We should have realised that you were putting out a video revealing what their new car is. It's a smart Roadster Brabus, in case anyone
has
seen the video. But you should see the video. Go and watch it.
And the two CV.
Run through his collection. And the 2CV, which I'm very excited about the 2CV because I like it.
Yeah, well, spoiler alert, I've just spent the last week doing a few 2CV-related videos coming up for future content on the YouTube channel.
I'm particularly excited about one of the 2CVs you've driven, which is like premium 2CV.
Would you say is it the holy grail of Deschevre-dom? I think it probably is.
I think it probably is, yes. Or up there with one of the, you know, those original prototypes that they found in barns.
Oh, yeah, the Nazi hidden ones.
Yes, the single headlight.
Yeah, they look so strangely. They look like a music box, I think, when they've got the cranking handle out the front. Like, I always think I could go up to
a music box.
Go up to a really early 2CV I can turn the starter and it'll sing Greensleeves at me before it.
Then Andre Citroen pops out of the canvas roof.
And then does a little sort of tap dance. and then obviously the Dutch police will go, no, that's not how you do it. When you're standing on the seats, this is how we do it.
Because that is amazing that they went, oh, yeah, we need air-cooled cars that we can stand on the seats and pop out the roof. And their bosses didn't just go, I've got you some 2CVs, lads.
Yeah, and they'll go, 16 horsepower is not going to cut it.
Another bit of housekeeping, very important, this one. We forgot last week, or I didn't realise, that Sade has just turned 65 last week. 16th of January is her birthday.
She's 65. She's... Wow.
I know. And somebody, I'll never find this now, but there's somebody on social media sort of tipped us off to a post where her son had put a picture of him and her on some social platform. And she's looking fantastic, as you'd expect.
She's an amazing woman. We've got to get her on. We've got to get her on this show somehow. She's almost exactly 20 years older than me, and I think I look 20 years older than her.
Bear with me, caller, because there's something else I've just remembered last week. No, I never will find this. I should have planned ahead, but somebody. Put up a clip on Twixter of
Dirty Trickster.
Hang on. Here we go. I think I found this. A chap called Nicholas. There's a brilliant Twixter account called Birmingham 81, which just talks about music generally.
In the Rotherham area, yeah.
Very good taste. In the Rotherham area in the 90s. In fact, put up a thing saying happy birthday to Sade. Here's one of her early TV appearances doing a Smooth Operator live on Switch in 1983.
Was it amazing?
Brilliant. I'll put a link to this because it's worth that alone is worth it. But then a chap called Nicholas said, this is great and all that, but all I can think about is what car Sade would have been driving at that early stage of her career. Copied us in for this discussion.
Oh, I saw this. Yes.
And then, yes, this was last week, wasn't it? So it must have been on her birthday. Some enterprising person realised that it's a chap called Richard Knight. Thank you for this, Richard. Very good lateral thinking. He realised that Sade was dating Robert Elms, the broadcaster, around this time. And he said she was dating Robert Elms. I think he might know. And copied in Robert Elms, who's on Twixter. Robert Elms almost immediately replied, Wolseley 1550.
That's amazing. I love that.
To which Richard quite rightly went, really? And Robert Elms replied, yep. So I can add no more than that is. And I was like, Wolseley 1550, sort of, you know, quite.
It's quite a dowdy 50s car, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, sort of a bit, you know, old school, bank manager car, maybe, sort of. I think they were police cars, weren't they? Speaking of which, I'm pretty sure they were used as police cars. It's sort of kind of Zed cars-y sort of era.
See, that's interesting. But so then, that would have been maybe a 30-year-old car in the 80s?
Yes, I suppose it would have been.
And I had a 30-year-old car in the 90s when I passed my test with the Beetle. And I look at people now, you know, like young people buying 30-year-old cars, it's definitely. And fashion does the 30-year thing, because if you think about Manchester with the flares and all that stuff in like 1990, that was 30 years on from probably when flares and stuff originally hit the big time. I love that. I love that cycle.
I think it was like probably like 20 years on, was it? So things come round quite quickly, as we now know, is sort of stuff that we remember quite vividly is coming back, like combat trousers.
Oh, that's true.
Lots of young women dressing like All Saints at the moment.
They are. My daughter,
my daughter's old.
Dressing like the All Saints. Exactly that. And she said to me that I found where I was just doing a feature out in the French Alps. I had to dig out my snowboarding trousers because I had to pretty much wear ski gear. And I realised that I basically look like a shit All Saint wearing my snowboard trousers. And
okay. But
my daughter went, oh, have you just got them? I went, no, I've had them for a really long time. No. And I've just dug them out because they're thermally efficient and that's what I need. So
my wife found an old coat of mine and she went, do you want to keep this? I tried it on. I was like, I like this coat. She went, yeah, it's very military look though. It's from that time when that was fashionable. And then we agreed that I should probably just hang on to it because it'll come back
completely.
Around again.
Completely.
Anyway, look, we should probably wrap this up. But I did just want to say a belated happy birthday to Sade, since she has a sort of, she casts a beautifully elegant shadow across this podcast for strange
reasons.
We love
Sade. The music,
we do love
Sade. We never tire of her sound.
Also, imagine a young Sade driving around London in, I imagine, sort of slightly scruffy old Wolseley. There is actually something very cool about that. So,
well, bucks the trend of, you know, she's like a, you know, a beautiful, elegant, interesting woman not driving around in a glamour pussmobile. And if she does genuinely still have a rotary, a maintenance-heavy motor rotary, then it just feeds that. I love that about it.
Yeah. Sade, call us. Or email hello@smithandsniff.com. Right. Well, anyway, we should stop. But before we do, I have three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Weight of Kate Show, in which he travels the world attempting to capture the heaviness of famous Catherines. This week, he's outside a mansion in Los Angeles, fumbling to set up an enormous set of scales. Oh. While shouting, get out here, Beckinsale, I haven't got all day. If that's not to your taste, there is, of course, always The Late Break Show with lots of excellent videos about cars. What have you got on there this week?
I get a bit shouty about Honda's new electric car. And genuinely, I know I've said this before, genuinely, I think there's a Barnfine Capri as well. No, genuinely. Oh, I think it is coming out this time.
Really?
But if you haven't seen the video that I should have talked about and promoted previously, it's where I do a roundup of all the cars that I currently own. Someone in the comments said that this is the most sad, embarrassing collection of semi-broken cars that I've seen a YouTuber ever do. So if you're expecting, yes, rude. I kind of giggled at that. But if you're expecting McLarens on HP and a glamorous aircraft hangar, it's not that. It's me being completely honest, actually, about the state of my cars and what I've got right now, and that I'm maybe a hopeless car tragic. So if you fancy that, go and watch it, and you'll find out about why I acquired a 2CV and a broken Brabus. like and subscribe and all that. Yeah. Peace.
The second thing I've got to tell you is, as I might have mentioned before, I have a new book out. It's called Boring Car Trivia 4. It's packed full of arcane information about cars. It's available as an ebook or a paperback from Amazon or a paperback from our merch shop. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that last week I said the moon is getting further away from Earth. And we weren't sure how it's possible to measure that. Quite a lot of people got in touch to point out that it's because there are mirrors on the moon that we, as humankind, have put there. They're called retroreflectors, if you want to be technical about it. There's currently 5 of them in use that were put there at various points by the Apollo astronauts. 2 have been put there remotely by the Russians. And then 1 was put in place by the Indian space program only last year. And these mirrors are used to bounce back. They fire a laser at the moon and then measure how long it takes the light to be bounced back.
Oh, okay. Well, I add a fourth piece of trivia to your finale? Because I never add anything to your finale because I'm not as good as you.
I was just going to say thank you to a couple of patrons, Phil R. and James Bassett, who were among the first to point out that the moon has mirrors on it. But yes, so go
fourth
on.
Piece of information is Britain's gas network still uses engines from 1960s RAF fighter jets, which I found out last week. Did you know this?
What?
Yes. Aging aircraft turbines, according to The Guardian, according to The Telegraph, will cost millions to replace, says the boss of National Gas. So Britain's sprawling gas network is still reliant on a fleet of ageing aircraft engines that were stripped out from 1960s RAF Lightning fighter jets. It emerged recently.
Those are Avon jet engines from the Lightning, I think, aren't they?
Yes, they are, Rolls Avons.
There's a lot of old British jet engines doing sterling service, keeping the power infrastructure of our country.
I could have done with one in that.
Which probably says something about Britain and its general standards. But anyway, we really should stop this now, but we will do it all again next week. And until then, thank you for listening.
Goodbye now. Cheers, mate. Thanks, mate. Bye. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. And now we do hats too. They're very stylish. This may come as a surprise, but Smith and Sniff have merchandise. You won't believe your eyes. Smith and Sniff have merchandise. Sadly, we don't do pies, but Smith and Sniff have merchandise. One day we might set ties. Smith and Sniff have merchandise.
Is that the falling down a well edition?
I drove past in the works van.
Oh.
I was flat out in second in the Berlingo.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.